Welcome back, everybody, to the Stark Wars podcast, where we talk all things Marvel and Star Wars. Please take a moment to check our show notes to find our social media, merch, and more. Today, we're recapping Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. So if you haven't seen the movie, I would get out of here. And I'm joined by my great co-host, Tommy, which if you didn't know, Tommy actually stands for the only man who might yell. Tommy, how's it going?
Good, but I'm not going to yell yet. Now I'm going to keep you waiting to see if I might yell. It's maybe it's going to come. You have to stay to the end of the podcast to see if I'm going to yell. Yeah. I'm good. I'm actually here also, Michael, to present to you the Stark Wars Employee of a Lifetime. Here you go. Here's your plaque.
All right. We'd love to see it. Thank you so much. What an honor. And we're also here, we have a guest here today, Tommy. Great guest. Our good friend, Joshua Spitzer, which if you didn't know, Joshua stands for just one small hole you might adore. Joshua, how's it going?
It's pretty good. And honestly, that's pretty true. I want to point out that Tommy's acronym, you would actually be Tom Wami. So we'll see how that goes.
Tom Wong.
Yeah, I had to throw an extra word in for both of you guys, so it matched up with, what was it, Modor?
Yeah. Sounds like some variant. But, oh, there's Tom Wombie. We don't talk about him.
It's funny because you would think your evil twin would have a mustache, but I think this twin would not have a mustache, right?
No, this one has maybe a soul patch or something, like a goatee. Ooh. Goatees, I feel like, are more evil. Okay, so yeah, I guess that's the question: is mustaches out, and is goatees now the new nefarious villain? You know,
I think it's clean shaven. Just look at Kang, right? I mean, yeah, it's not beards. Good. Joshua and I can attest to that.
Yeah,
right. No villain ever sports a beard. We know that. Yeah.
We need to go back, look at all Marvel villains. What was their facial hair, and then do a ratio to see if clean shaven is the most evil of facial hairs.
Yeah, I'll use some AI art app to combine all the faces of the villains to create
That's what Marvel should do. All right, scrap King Marvel. You should just take all your best villains and make one mega villain of all of them, and just use a face swap to get it done.
Yeah. Josh, I'm going to throw it to you first. Really excited to have you here today. Thanks for coming here, but I want to get your takes off the riff here. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, what did you think?
I think it was a good start to something great. You know, this is something that a lot of people are having anticipation for. This is supposed to be the big reveal for the big bad in the cinematic universe. We've already, of course, gotten He Who Remains before. But right now, I think we could have done a little bit better. But people have expectations of a new Thanos. This isn't Thanos. This is a whole different character. And we have to take that with a grain of salt and say, you know, he's going to be introduced differently.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's going to be a lot of fun diving into the comparisons between Kang and what we've had in the past. But Tommy, I got to get your takes up front here. I know we kind of had a podcast before the podcast, but let everyone know, what did you think about Quantumania?
Yeah, and I want to preface with this movie to me was a good movie. I think for me, why I'm passionate about this one and what I could see them doing differently is I see the track for it to be an outstanding movie. There's a lot of things it's doing really well. I think one of the things off the top that I think it hurts it from the beginning is I think it's two movies clashing with each other the entire time, which is the Ant-Man fun that we've seen in the last two movies of this goofiness, this thing with Ant-Man. Yet you're trying to get the severity and the intenseness of Kang and setting up this bad guy and making it feel dark. And I think constantly throughout the movie, it's battling with itself with if it's a comedy or if it's a really dark, Endgame type vibe to it, or a Thanos type vibe. I think overall I enjoyed it. I think I had issues with that. I think Kang's really fun. I do have some issues with Kang that we can get into later. I think I'm a little too close to a version of Kang that I think could have been a little bit more interesting than the version we're getting here, but I think it's really exciting. And I think hopefully setting us up for what the future of Marvel is going to look like.
Yeah, guys. I got to say, I there's no chance you guys love this movie more than me. I really, really like this. And this is like, I don't think I've liked a Marvel movie this much since No Way Home. And I feel like it was just such a breath of fresh air for me. And I think the big thing that, like, yes, I have a lot, I have complaints. There's like 100 jokes I didn't laugh at. It is, has like weird tonal shifts. Some of the characters are so over the top. But like, for me, it comes down to like, we're in the quantum realm, baby. Anything goes. And like, that's, I felt like it was an excuse to do some wild and crazy stuff. And like, this was just like fun in a way I haven't had with a Marvel movie in so long. This is my new Eternals, guys. Like, I know, like, I feel like I'm coming out of the movie just like I did last time, where like everyone hates it. And I'm like, what's going on? I really enjoyed it. So I will be very biased here today. And I'll be speaking up for the one listener that liked the movie too.
I think you're getting this wrong. I think we all here enjoyed the movie. It's just, you know, we may not be praising it as much as you.
Fair. That is fair. Okay. Well, guys, I warned you. This is going to be a very free-form discussion. I'm going to be all over the place. But do we want to start our big here? Do we want to do a deep dive into Kang and what we thought about Kang? Because I feel like that might be what I have the most to say about. Josh, I'll throw it to you. Kang the Conqueror, how did you feel about his story as a whole here, how they handled him, everything?
I mean, there's a reason I wanted to reserve my spot for Quantumania. I mean, I talked to you, I mean, months ago and said, like, hey, is there any way that I can put my name down for this? And I think this is exactly why. Jonathan Majors knocked it out of the park for this role, the one he was given. And, you know, a lot of people saying he's not menacing, he's not thing. I think the reason he wasn't menacing to people is because he's not the one that's supposed to be menacing, right? He's, of course, Kang the Conqueror, the one that's supposed to be conquering all the worlds, but he talks about all his other variants, right? The same thing that He Who Remains said, wait until you see my variants, right? So maybe this is supposed to be a precursor. And let's talk about how much force it took to take him down. People say, oh yeah, he got taken down by Ant-Man and the Wasp, right? Well, it's giant Ant-Man, it's giant Cassie, it's Hank Pym, all of his ants who have 1,000+ years of technology included, a whole revolution. And even then, Kang still got to the portal and almost walked through. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens with him. And end of the day, it was only his ego, which is what you expect from a villain, to stop him.
Yeah, that was really well said. Tommy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we all are on agreement of this, of like, Jonathan, just the acting of Kang, the different, even when we still weren't, when we're figuring out the timeline and discovering the past, and, you know, Kang seems like a nice man. There were things that he was doing with his face at times that showed me the darkness inside of him that I loved. There was just so much small, like, show not tells. I really think this was the big part of the movie that worked well. When it was isolated, when it got brought into the Ant-Man verse, that's where it lost me a little bit, because it almost felt like two things that don't fit together. And I think my other issue with Kang in general, not with the acting and the performance, this, I feel like they're focusing too much on A, Kang's stick being variants, and B, focusing on this idea that he just kills worlds and kills you. To me, as we're saying, like, it's not Thanos. I feel like they're almost trying to make him Thanos, and that's just not Kang's MO. Like, his whole thing, from my experience of him in the comics, was he's a lot more calculated. He's the reason he has all this technology and is so advanced is he goes throughout different, you know, universes, multiverses, taking things, making himself the most powerful being by doing all this stuff. And he only goes to places for those intents, for a mission, not like, I'm just going to kill everyone. And I think they didn't focus enough on that for me yet. I hope they do. I hope they get into that. Like, he's not just out there killing multiverses. There's usually reasons, at least in his mind. He's a judge, jury, and executioner, but a very biased judge, jury, and executioner that believes he's the only one that can make these decisions.
Yeah, I do. I hear what you're saying. I feel like there was one line that really laid it out for me. And of course, I'm not going to repeat it exactly, but it was something along the lines of, I saw the multiverses converging and dying, right? And I had to take it upon myself to control that. And I feel like that's even something we saw in Loki, where he basically had to play puppet master in all of these universes and make people think certain things and make people follow his orders. And if somebody interfered with that in any single way, he would have to demolish them. And he did that because he wanted to protect all of the multiverses. And I think there's a lot of headcanon there. I think they could have drove that home a lot more. But I think for me, it was enough. I want to touch on, like, and I think that's the big thing. It's hard to judge Kang right now because it was just like when we saw He Who Remains, right? It was like, well, this isn't the Kang. And even now we're like, well, this, we don't know what this means. After the movie, I saw this with my brother, good friend of the podcast, Jake O'Rear, and he was like, they killed the Kang. Like, this was the Kang. He was the one going around killing everyone. And my take was a little different, and I want to get to you guys' take on this. Like, is every Kang like this, where they're jumping around doing similar things, killing Avengers? Or was he just the one? And I don't know. I have a lot of different thoughts on that, but I guess, do we have any speculation about the other Kangs and what they might be doing?
I don't love him. I'm going to tell you that right off the bat. It's hard. Kang the Conqueror, I think, was done so well, and I hope like he does come back in some version, to be honest. I think it is fun to see some of these versions of the Kangs, and some of them are straight out of the comics. Like, the more Egyptian-looking one is Rama Tut, which has its own storyline. So each one does have their own things going on, so I like that. But the more classic version is Kang the Conqueror. Plus, you know, I know this movie is getting tons of connections to Spy Kids 2 MODOK and even their colors of costumes. This literally looked like Spy Kids 3 when Sylvester Stallone's character is there with all the different costumes versions of himself. It took me so out of it. I'm hopeful it's not going to be that cheesy. I hope that there's some drama behind it. But I'm worried, again, like, we're getting too focused on these variants and that being like the big Kang thing. But the big thing is Kang the Conqueror. And in the variants are these other like type things, but it's not like his superpower.
Well, quick question, Tommy. Did you like Spy Kids as a kid?
I loved it as a kid. Yeah.
It's cheesy now. See, I think that's where I'm at.
Oh, I knew it was cheesy at the end. As I was watching it, I was a kid in theaters with the 3D glasses saying this was cheesy.
I think I need to, because when I like Spy Kids, and then I grew up and I realized it was cheesy. I like Quantumania now. I think I need to grow up again before I hang on Quantumania.
Yeah, old me and Michael would go on the podcast and be like, oh, I get it now. You're right, Quantumania. Maybe not all it is.
Joshua, you seem like you might have a take on that.
So I actually disagree with Tom, and I think that having more Kang variants is a good thing because this is going to be a very Kang-centric phase, right? So we have, like you said, Rama Tut was teased at the end, right? That is a very Fantastic Four villain, right? I think what they're going to do is I think they're going to take these Kang variants and spread them throughout the series and the movies and lead up into. So you're going to have the Fantastic Four take on Rama Tut trying to stop him. You're going to have the Young Avengers or whatever it is, whatever is building up, go take on a different Kang variant. And they're all going to accumulate into one final ending, whether that's Kang Dynasty or Secret Wars or whatever it is. And I think that's a really good buildup because you see the powers of all these different Kangs, where they're coming from, why they're trying to stake stuff. And you might see them lose, right? But they might be achieving what they wanted. And I think what's wanted is one of them has to be He Who Remains, because we know how this whole thing ends. He Who Remains says it in Loki. He's the one who ends it, right? So he's among one of those Kangs, and he is already devising his plan to overthrow the Kangs and start it all over again, because he's going to be sitting at the end of the time.
And I don't mind that, like, what you're pitching of, like, you know, different Kangs, as long as they treat them as separate entities, as long as they treat them as, like, Rama Tut, not Kang, you know, that's a variant King over there. That's where we're fighting, Kang, the variant. Because I think that, like, that's my thing is, like, it's just becoming more of, like, that's his power is having all these variants, as opposed to, like, you're saying, it's like they all have their own missions, their own intentions, their own personalities that are guided that aren't all together as well. Like, they have this council type thing, it seems. But and to your point with, yeah, we already know how it kind of ends. So I'm intrigued, but I definitely want them to also, like, focus on I think I just need to be more clear. Like, to your point, what you're saying is great. I need Marvel to tell me that. I need Marvel to, like, tell me what King's intentions and motivations are and how it impacts the cinematic universe as a whole.
So I'm curious on your thought. Do you think He Who Remains and Kang the Conqueror that we just saw, do you think those are too similar then?
I think no, but I think, like, the way people talked about it and the way it was, like, I feel like it didn't do a good enough job of getting people not to talk about it as, like, just variants. I think He Who Remained, I'm someone who loved He Who Remained, but I heard so many people being like, well, that's not, that's interesting, that's where they go with King. I'm like, no, you have to see them as two separate beings. And I think it's a very hard challenge because it's the same actor. It's very hard for people to separate it in their minds. But yeah, no, I think King the Conqueror is a whole different thing. Oh, unless he's not. What if him going through the thing warped him and he became He Who Remained? Who's to say?
Well, that yeah.
That was going to be one of my theories, is that Kang the Conqueror is going to end up becoming He Who Remains because he's going to help the Avengers to stop the other Kangs, and then he's going to be the last one to create that perfect timeline, which is that one world, right? And that's where we get all the pruning technology and everything like that is through him.
Mm. This was my thought from the get-go when I heard so many people. Let's see, we had a question here. I want to pull that up. It was the Chef Killer on Instagram said, was Kang murdered too easily? And my rebut to that is, was he murdered? This was my thing. And, like, there's so many complaints about, you know, if you go back to Black Widow with Taskmaster, people would be like, oh, they just wasted this character. And this was before we knew that Taskmaster would return in any light. But I'm like, guys, Taskmaster's not dead. Like, I feel like they left Taskmaster alive for a reason. And it's like,
alive or dead, they still wasted Taskmaster, some would argue.
I will find them on the debate stand and go to toe with them. But yeah, I guess that is that's my question to you guys, is did you feel like, I guess Joshua kind of touched on it already, but was this too of an easier match of Kang, right? Like, you know, especially when you come down to, yes, there was, like, a lot of force between him and actually coming out of the quantum realm, but there, I guess the final showdown between him and Ant-Man and then the Wasp, I don't know, was that too easy?
For me, the King fight was not, but the whole thing was. Like, you have, it's a hard thing with, I think, honestly, one of the only properties that has done, like, the idea of Rebels fighting against the Empire well is Star Wars, because it felt grandiose. The Rebels felt like they had multiple groups, multiple factions doing different things. I think the problem for me in this was, like, the Rebels, we only ever met one group. And so it's like, how did you just destroy? Yes, you had the help of Ants and you had the help of Ant-Man and all this stuff. But it's like, if King's supposed to be this epic thing, yet got taken out by this small Rebel band, that bothered me more than I think the actual Ant-Man fight, because Ant-Man got his butt kicked out of him. I thought the fight here with King, both the fight with just King and Ant-Man on the bridge, was a really good fight sequence for King. And then I thought the King, Wasp, and Ant-Man to get to the portal was another really epic fight that felt worth it. I think Hank with his ants was a little much. I have thoughts about what they could do with Hank in this movie. I think they could have done a couple different directions at times, and this idea of these superpowered ants coming in and just wrecking everything was a little cute for me. But to answer your question with a long-winded answer, yeah, I think it worked.
So I want to say that I think it worked in a different way. Kang is this egocentric character, right? We have this guy who wants to conquer the entirety of eternity. That's his words. He wants to conquer everything, every timeline, everything from start to finish, right? So in his mind, if he is that great to be able to conquer everything, he does not want to be the one that gets stopped by Ant-Man. So the reason he pummels him and he keeps going at Ant-Man, there was times where Ant-Man was laying on the ground, he could have walked right through the portal, right? But he didn't want to have the satisfaction of Ant-Man still being around. He wanted to make him remember and make him, like, engraved in his brain that, hey, Kang is not to mess around with. And that's why he loses ultimately, because he got too much on his plate and he couldn't finish it all. And so, you know, had he just tried to take his own time chair, not just his whole entire city with him, if he had just tried to take the time chair and go, and he could have easily wiped out people through that. But he wanted to take more. He wanted to do more because that's who he is. He is so infatuated with having everything perfect to his plan that he just oversaw little things. And, you know, as Scott says, you know, little things come in good big packages. So, you know.
Yeah. Well said. I want to move on here a little bit. We can come back to Kang if we have other thoughts later, but we did touch on like kind of the quote unquote rebellion. And I want to talk about a lot of the different characters that we got here because yes, I feel like a lot of them were half baked and underused, but also like I didn't need too much of them. I loved all. We have like three, and I don't know any of their names. But there's the warrior chick, there's the blob man, and then there's the dude with the laser head. And I loved them all. I thought
the mind control guy is all, to add him to the mix.
Yes, exactly.
Well.
Yeah. And I thought all of these guys, like their powers were really well fleshed out. It was fun seeing them fight around. I didn't know if you guys had any thoughts on any of these guys.
I think, yeah, I think the warrior who I had her name somewhere, I felt like they were trying to build her up to be like almost like a secondary main, like someone we should care about. And I never felt that. I do think they were fun, but I never felt that like caring about the rebels that much. I think my favorite was glowing hammer light boy. Like he was great. I love that power of this light being shot out of his head.
Yeah, he was the one that died. He was my favorite. I thought he had like the coolest look, like just totally original. I was sad. So
yeah. I think with Marvel movies, and this happens all the time, is that they introduce characters and they always get underused, right? I'm sure we'll see them pop up in another variation other than Hammerhead. but I mean, for the most part, like we have this guy who can literally read minds, and we didn't see anything telepathy-wise between him and MODOK. Right. One of the biggest, you know, telepathy users, whatever it is, you know, he's got this whole implant in his brain, whatever. And they didn't utilize that. And that's kind of like we didn't have the guy who could read minds, read Kang's mind to find out his plan. Like there's a lot that was underused and I wish that they had done more. But I mean, again, I love the supporting characters, but they just tried to do too much, too many supporting characters.
Okay, that's fair. I did have a question here from Earth 894. They asked, would you drink the ooze? Here's my thing. I think I would because Cassie said so. It seemed like Cassie had already gone through the process. I would trust my kid. Maybe not now. Like, I don't know if I'm my three-year-old said drink it, I would do it. But like if they grew up a little bit, then I think I would do it. But yeah, are you guys drinking the ooze?
Yeah, I think I'd have more questions than, like, I don't... This is the thing with movies when they do stuff like this. There is a part where it's like, if I'm the person trying to get someone to drink this weird thing, I'm definitely aware, like, it's a weird thing, so I feel like I'd be setting it up more of, like, hey, don't worry, like, this isn't weird. No one answers his questions. It's just like, drink this. We'll tell you after you've drank it, though.
I mean, I felt very Indiana Jones, right? Where it's like, he's got the heart out and they're going, Kali Ma, Kali Ma. And like, you don't know what they're saying, right? They're just saying a bunch of gibberish before you drink it. But honestly, if I was in that position, it doesn't look like they were giving me a choice to drink it or not. So I probably would end up drinking it.
Yeah. But Cassie at least spoke English. She could be like, hey, you drink it, you'll hear what they're doing, but that's less exciting than having a piece of
rice.
What'd you guys think of the little blob guy and like his obsession with having holes? And I thought I had a good payoff, right?
The payoff was great. The giant like hole that kills everyone at the end was great. Yeah, I think he worked for me. He was goofy. I didn't need enough. I think he's someone that like I had the right amount of him. You know, I'm fine with the time we had with whole blob.
The running,
yeah,
though.
He was
a good
addition.
Yeah. Did you catch his running in like the battle scenes? He was always in the front and running like, I don't know, he was chafing.
Yeah.
I don't expect you guys to have comments on that, but just something to note.
I did notice the running too, and I also noticed being in the front. I'm like, boy, you should be in the back. Like, to be honest, they should keep him in the room. He seems to be the most powerful thing. Like, he can create basically a liquid to be able to hear any language. How are we not protecting this guy and not putting him in the front line?
It sounds like that's commonplace, though, because when they go to the bar, they drink the a similar liquid, and they can hear and understand people. So is it?
Did he sell it? Is it from him, or is it from multiple? is there many? Because he says specifically, like, this is made for me. So, like, did someone steal him and, like, take his samples and reproduce it? Is there a whole black market language ooze corporation happening underneath in the quantum realm?
I don't know that I dug into this one too much, but probably, like, there's other guys like him that, you know, or, like, just like Earth, like, I don't know, like, there's different elements in different things, so.
I don't know. I think we need it. This is our next audio documentary, Michael. We need to deep dive into the understandings of the quantum realm, specifically about how this liquid is mass produced to bars and stuff.
We'd have to dive really deep to figure this out. Maybe we can read Scott Lang's book. I guess he wrote the book before the quantum realm, though. So
we had to dig deep by going deep into the quantum realm ourselves.
Okay. Another big character here, which seems to have driven up some controversy, is our good buddy MODOK. Tommy's already rolling his eyes. I'll throw it to you first, Tommy. You didn't love him.
No, I didn't. So this is something we talked about before. I did see the MODOK. I had feelings he was going to be in the movie. I didn't know he was there, and I didn't know that bit. That was a surprise to me. I didn't love MODOK. And it sucks because I actually think MODOK's a character that is very interesting to me to write. Like, I think there's two ways to write him. Either you double down on the fact that he's goofy, because just by looking at him, he's a goofy character, or you make him tragic. And I like the more tragic route with MODOK. I think the Avengers game is a good example of what you can do with a MODOK character, where you make it where, like, they could have had Darren where, like, the traveling through the quantum realm made him more sporadic, more like his mind is just warped, and it's honestly this tragic thing that he now thinks all he can be is this killer. Like, and they kind of did that, but with him kind of still remembering his past life, I feel like just don't make him remember his past life and make it be more like he's more tragic, fallen hero kind of, or fallen villain kind of thing. That there's bits I loved. I think he has one of the best lines at the end when, you know, he's dying and he says, "I die an Avenger." Yep, buddy, you're a full-fledged Avenger now. Like, that was gold. And there's bits that I liked, but overall, it's another of those things of, like, I just see the potential for MODOK to be good, and to know that it's wasted in this way, it's very hard to see.
Yeah, I don't think I've laughed at a Marvel joke so hard, maybe ever. Like, I was dying. Like, and it wasn't even just that line that he wanted to be an Avenger. It was, like, the look that Scott had on his face of, like, kind of the realization that, like, okay, he's gonna die, I'll just say yes and then it'll be done, and he does. So I don't know, I thought that was a lot of fun. And here's my thing, it's like, much like the rebels of, I didn't need MODOK, so therefore, like, I didn't feel like I didn't have enough of MODOK, if that makes sense. He was there for a couple of laughs, and, like, he was kind of interesting in that, like, he was like the Boba Fett to Kang's Darth Vader, right? Like, he was kind of like the bounty hunter, and again, just small. It's my big issue, and Tommy, kind of with what you said, not even just remembering his past, why even make that the character anyway? It's like, that was so shoehorned in. Maybe that's my bigger complaint.
And, like, every time he meets a new person, it's like, "Hey, I'm Darren. Do you remember me?" It was like, we don't need to stop. We have so little time in this movie. Why are we stopping down so that he could have these memory lanes with the past people that did him wrong? Like, we don't need him, like, meeting Cassie, then meeting Scott, then meeting Hank again and being like, "Ah, it's me, you're a Brit," and then meeting with Hope. Just so he can be like, yeah, like, so we can feel awkward about the fact that, yeah, she once slept with this guy, and now it's weird because he's this weird baby leg thing.
Josh, we've ranted enough. What did you think of MODOK?
I actually think MODOK was a really good addition to this, because if you look at villains past, like, let's look at Ultron for a second. Ultron cracking jokes, I wasn't a fan of it, right? You have this very serious character that's trying to, and he's throwing around jokes that I just feel like are not very him. But now you have Kang, who's the very serious one, and he has his counterpart, which is the more fun one. So that way it's not Kang making the jokes, you know, and it always seems like this somebody has the goofy sidekick or whatever. And I think it works out here because it is a one movie stint, and I do hate that he's not going to be around. But I was honestly fully expecting him to say, like, I'm an Avenger now, his heartbeat flatlines, and then it like shocks his suit again and it like revitalizes him. You know, I thought he was just going to live just so he could have that moment. But I don't know. I wish we got to see more, but I think he was a good addition in the role he was given.
I like your point about Kang is, in order to let Kang be serious, you're using this villain as the shield of, like, you can make all the jokes. Do you think the jokes work, though? To me, it's like the jokes were more about MODOK and not just funny jokes about, like, we also never saw MODOK and, like, Kang interact with each other. He's supposed to be, like, his Boba Fett, but they really never, like, we never got a connection or a, like, do they ever talk to each other? Is there, like, awkward family dinners between MODOK and Kang?
See, I see MODOK as somebody that's like looking up to Kang as like this all great, mighty person. He wants to be with Kang all this time. But then we have the interaction where he's talking to Cassie or whoever it is at the jail cell. And Kang says, don't interrupt me. And he just flings him off to the side. You have to think, like, why does he appreciate him so much? And that's what we don't get to see a lot. And I wish we did get to see more of that. But I don't know. It's hard to think about that. But yeah, I do like the background noise of that.
Final comment here. The butt, I'm a fan. Just put it like that.
It looks so gelatinous. It was so, oh.
So, I didn't need to see it. Like, that was not on my bucket list of 2023 is all I'm trying to say.
That's fair. Okay, let's move on to another big character we get here. I am constantly on the Young Avengers watch, and we get a big one in Cassie Lang. And Tommy's grim, like, got a face on, but I love Cassie here. Like, I thought the character was so full of heart, and like, I feel like the thematic decisions that she makes throughout the movie really make sense, from her being like a protester and wanting to stick up for the little guy to her continuously doing that throughout the entire movie. And then like the charm of the character when she got big and how excited she was. Like, I feel like this is the type of life that we didn't get it from a character like Ironheart, you know. It's like, and I think that's my thing with this movie, is Marvel movies so often are make or break on the side characters, right? Like, we typically know who the lead is, but then you're kind of introduced with villains and like sidekicks. And a lot of times my enjoyment of the movie hangs on that. And I felt like Cassie had so much more life to her than we see that from a lot of side characters. So Tommy, I feel like you might have a counterpoint. I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, no, and I think you make some really good points. I think overall, I don't mind Cassie. I think the issue with Cassie is she hasn't been developed a lot, and I think this movie just assumed you're supposed to know what a father and daughter relationship is like, and it's like, hey, remember when they were kids? But this is our first time, A, with this actress, because they switched out the actress from Avengers when we saw a grown-up Cassie, but we haven't seen grown-up Cassie that much. And so I think for me, it's more of, it's not that I think the actress did a bad job or anything written. I think I could have just used a scene or two more of the family interacting before they jumped into the quantum realm. Specifically, like, I think there could have been a really interesting storyline with Janet dealing with becoming a mother again. Like, you know, even though she's always a mother, but the idea of, like, maybe she's struggling with that. She's having these dreams about the quantum realm. And then Cassie and Scott are also not great of, like, this dynamic and this balance of, like, you know, she didn't have Scott for 5 years. She learned to be independent and do all this stuff. And I feel like we could have had a interesting B plot of these different parental relationships clashing, and how this trip to the quantum realm kind of heals them in a way by being able to talk about some of these issues.
So in the beginning of the movie, when they split off, right? So it felt like the first quarter of the movie, when they got into the quantum realm, they had the two split parties, and it felt like that forever. Do you think you would have changed the groupings of that with maybe Janet and Cassie, and then have Hank and Scott together. So you have Scott worrying about his daughter, but he can't find her. Do you think that works out better, or do you think what they did was the right way?
So actually, I think I like the pairings, and this is actually one of my bigger complaints about the movie in general. Like if I were to change anything about the pairings, I would think there was no reason for Hope to be with that group. And guess what? Throughout this entire movie, there's like no reason. She does have a couple moments where she saves Scott, but like much ado about nothing for Hope. The second name in the title of this movie is like basically nobody. Like it's weird to say that I have more to say about Hank and Janet than I do Hope, but
Michael, they gave her Ant-Man and the Wasp, and she had more to do in that movie. Now they don't have to. Once they finally address the issue people have with Ant-Man, they now just act like it doesn't happen, and now we don't need to get females for their plots in their future movies. You didn't know that, Michael?
Sorry.
No, it's, I mean,
all the names written out for the podcast, and I forgot Hope. Honestly, I forgot she was in the movie.
Yeah, they like, I'm clearly being, you know, sarcastic. That, yeah, that's a huge problem, right? Like, Hope needed more to do, and I think moving her over to the other group could have gave that to her. It also opens up the Hank, Janet, and like them trying to force a weird conversation about the fact that she definitely boned in the quantum realm. Like, they really forced that in there for like no reason. No one was asking that question.
I wish I had sound clips from the movie that I could pull, but I don't. I would totally have In the Ways That It Matters as a sound clip. Bill Murray, again, another character that, like, a whole lot of nothing, but nice to see his face there, I guess. It was a cool fight scene, too, though, when they're after all that, you know, weird flirting and him explaining why he's with Kang. Where like they have like this little drink. This is like, this feels Star Wars to me. The little squid drink, and then they like blow it up and it's like eating everybody. I thought that was a lot of fun. And there's like so many little set pieces in this movie like that that I don't know. It just it was never boring for me.
No, and I think I said it of like the first half of this movie I loved. I think there's a fun mystery happening. The quantum realm feels almost wildlike and scary and scientific and all these things. I think the Bill Murray part is where it kind of like loses it for me, because I think it becomes too realistic. Like we get these cities, which I don't mind King City, but I feel like the other cities kind of bother me. The fact that there's almost like just a hidden world that's essentially our world, but just smaller, got me at times. But yeah, I think, you know, I think Bill Murray was fun, I guess.
Yeah, I think I'm adding to my list of fears that shrinking subatomic is probably one of those now. Because now thinking about that, I am very terrified of that.
Yeah, I have a lot of fears. I don't know how that would ever happen to me. So I hope I don't have to worry about it. Like, who knows? Because like a lot of weird things happen in our world. That might be like a couple years from now. That could be like a thing that happens. So, okay, well, let's talk about. I have Ant-Man on the list. We kind of touched on Ant-Man all over the place here. But there was a couple scenes that we haven't talked about that I wanted to touch on. Like when he does go into the device thing and sees, I don't love this. But he sees a bunch of Ant-Men and they have to like build an anthill to get up. And there's the one Baskin-Robbins guy. And Tommy, I've had this complaint before about, like, you know, the multiverse and different versions and variants. They're like, these are all the possibilities of you, Scott Lang. So you're telling me every single possibility is an Ant-Man, and then there's just one Baskin-Robbins? Like, why isn't, like, I don't know.
Well, and I feel like they didn't, like, I thought it was, like, all his possibilities of that moment. And the Baskin-Robbins kind of throws it up because, yeah, now what's the difference between multiverses and this? To me, they were supposed to be different, which is the multiverse is like you, it's a different whole life. This is like this version of you, this life of you chose, it's almost like Everything Everywhere, where it's like you chose to, you know, go left instead of right today. That's just like that kind of stuff. So I think it's two separate entities, but the Baskin-Robbins, definitely for the joke, they almost ruin it because they decided to make that silly joke.
Yeah, the joke wasn't worth it for the moment, but it does bring up a good point for inside that little cube, right? So that is essentially where Kang gets sucked up at the end of the movie, right? Into that little box. So he's now in his own Schrodinger's box. And does that basically mean he's going to be talking to all his variants, or is it going to be all of the duplicates, kind of like what we saw of him? Because if he's able to kind of pick the brains of all of his variants in his own Schrodinger's box, he's going to have a better idea of how to defeat his own variants moving forward.
Yeah, I wonder if it will. I like that. I think I see it more of maybe because he got forced into it in such an aggressive way. Maybe he becomes all like maybe he comes out of this and we see even stronger King the Conqueror, where it's like, I can see all the possibilities. Like, I have now become time itself. Like, I can see, I am Jobu Tabaki. Like,
yeah. So, what else do we need to talk about, guys? What am I?
Let's talk about Hank for a second.
Okay, yeah, Hank and the Ants.
What is Hank doing here? What's the point of Hank now? Okay, this is my pitch. You kill Hank in this movie. We don't need Hank anymore. What is he doing? He's gotten everything he wants. He got his wife back. He has a good relationship with his daughter. This is the perfect time to take Hank out. He's now seen the quantum realm. He's achieved all of his goals. He knows everything. There is no point to continue having Hank in these movies. That's my pitch.
I don't hate it. I really liked Hank and Janet in this movie. I think the ants worked for me because even when they got sucked into the quantum realm with the ants, I was like, those are Chekhov's ants, right? Those are coming back. And so I don't know. Like, I thought it was a lot of fun seeing him with the ants. Like, maybe, yes, at the end you could kill him. I think he was worth the squeeze in this movie. We'll see what they can give us after this movie.
Yeah, I think the squeeze of him dying, though, in this, because this family is too perfect right now. I mean, there's too much good happening in the Ant-Man household. I need tragedy, and I think Hank. But I agree with you. The ant payoff with Hank was nice, and kill him right afterwards. Have him bring the ants in, and then he does something to save Janet, and then Hank goes off into the sunset.
I think they're setting up something with that, though, because it is almost like he's having a perfect life. Like, you look at the beginning of Scott's story, right? The very beginning, you know, he's got people handing him donuts. He's got people, you know, high-fiving him down the street, you know, super awesome. He's living a great life. And then at the end of the movie, you know, he has that realization of, oh my God, wait, was he right? And then he just has this freak out and he's like, oh, let's go back to the movie. And then you get to the scene where he eats the cake and the cake doesn't taste good, right? So once you have your cake, you got to eat it too, kind of thing, right? And so is his life about to get progressively worse because he made that one decision?
Josh, I think you're hitting on something big of like, I think there's way more to this ending. We spent a good amount of time of him basically like, we also don't know if he didn't change his universe, you know? Like, he went to the quantum realm. He did all this stuff with King. So, like, to your point, the cake didn't taste well. I think there's something going on with the world. I think he tweaked it, and it's going to be real messy. And I think a lot of things we're going to soon discover a lot of differences, like small things that Marvel's going to put in. Like, oh, maybe instead of the bro moving company, it's like Gal's moving company. Like, small little changes throughout the timeline that I think we'll start to see, I'm hoping.
All right, guys, I really want to talk about these post-credit scenes. So let's dive into it. The first one we get is the Council of Kangs. And you kind of get to see the, you know, how grand Kang really is. And I think this is the thing about Kang. And like the thing that I was telling my brother after the movie is like, yes, one Kang is not very daunting. What makes Kang great in this instance is the fact that there's an army of him, and there might be kings that are weaker and there might be kings that are stronger. And I'm like, just so excited to dive into that and see what that looks like. So, I thought this was a really good tease. What'd you guys think of the post-credits scene?
I mean, ever since we got the Kangs in Loki, right? We have the three main ones. I mean, I've been very excited for this moment. You know, you get Avengers, 292, you get the whole Kangs and everything like that. And just having this football stadium, seeing how excited these guys are getting, just that one of their Kang variants died or supposedly died, right? And it's like, what is going on? Because, you know, to a normal viewer who steps into this, has never heard of Kang, they're going to see that and they're going to be so confused. But to me, it's very thrilling because you have all these possibilities, like we talked about with Rama Tut. We have a possibility of Immortus. You know, one of them's got to be He Who Remains at the end of the day. And there's a lot of potential. And I think it just opens up so many doors for the Marvel going forward.
Tommy, big Council of Kings guy.
Yeah, I mean, I said a little bit in the beginning. It's hard. It definitely made me feel Spy Kids 3 still onto the different variations. I do think it builds up something, like you're saying. Clearly, in this version of Kang, they really do want to make the variants this the focal point. You know, the focal point that it is the quantity of Kangs and the fact that they are all like intelligent beings that they're challenging. Yeah, so I think it's interesting. I think it's setting up something, hopefully.
Yeah. So we will talk about the second post-credit scene, which was very interesting. We got it was basically like a Loki season 2 preview. We see Loki and Mobius in the audience listening to this guy rant on about, I don't even remember what he was talking about, but Loki's like, "That's him. That's him." And Mobius is like, "Nah, not to this is it. This is all you got." Again, just makes me very excited for what's going on in Loki season 2. So if you guys have any thoughts about this.
Yeah, we see, I believe they're watching Victor Timely, who is a Kang variant. Spoiler, if you didn't already assume. But yeah, this made me feel really good, Michael. And I'll tell you why. The minute I saw this on the screen, I went, "Oh man, I'm winning. I'm definitely winning the prediction bet." Because that made me feel like Loki is going to tell us way more about the future than this movie did. So I felt real happy about that.
All right. You took a step towards your prediction, but I also took a step towards my prediction. I said Kang's going to die at least twice this year.
You did. That's true. So we're both like, I thought I had a leg up, but I look over, you're right there with me. We're on the same. We're on the same space. This is Monopoly. Oh, no.
I guess I should stop arguing that version of Kang might still be alive, though. So
yeah, you really got to be all for that he died.
Yeah. So, yeah, Josh, you excited for Loki season 2?
I think so. I mean, Victor Timely in the comics, I think he turns into Immortus or Prime Kang or one of the two, like one of the big bads of the Kangs. And it's because he's the one who's like establishing this technology. He's the putting the footwork for that. And I think we'll see that, you know, how like they like to do flashbacks and stuff like that. I think he might have been an inspiration for Tony Stark's dad for his technology and stuff like that, because he'll be around that same time. So I'm very excited to see what they take with it, because, you know, Loki season 2 is going to deal with time travel. We all know it. And I think they can do a lot with that. So very excited for Loki. Yeah.
Cool. There's a segment here that I have to do. I opened up the question to our audience on Instagram to do the cameo draft. This is something we did for Wakanda Forever. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I thought I would use this time to announce the winners on here. Josh, you had a very, I want you to lay out what was your prediction, because it was one of the more interesting ones.
So my prediction was sometime in the movie, they were going to have a Kang killing spree where they went through and just killed off a bunch of Avengers. So we're going to have like Tom Cruise's Iron Man. We threw out John Kay's, killed him again, and a bunch of different variants, Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man, and stuff like that. And I felt like that would have played into a little bit more of why Janet would have been even more terrified, why we should be terrified if they actually showed us that. Clearly it didn't happen. They just showed us screaming kids and burning worlds, but I don't know. Yeah.
No, it was an interesting one. I'm going to read out. So there was only one cameo that was guessed correctly, but multiple people guessed the one. So we got Jason Chadwick, Sam from Two Girls, One Multiverse. Let's see here. Cobb's Corner podcast. Son of a bit, Logan. Here's the thing. Logan kind of broke it. So, because Logan had this conversation with me before, he was like, because he wanted to understand the rules of the cameo draft. And he was like, if I say Loki, does that count every single variant of Loki? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he was like, okay, so Sylvie. And I was like, oh, well, that feels like a different character, but I will accept it. So anybody that said Sylvie as well, I will accept it. Because Son of a Bits says Loki in parentheses, ideally Sylvie. I'm going to count that one. And then next year we have two black nerds who said Sylvie. So I don't know. Now the rules, I'm going to give it to them though. Also Danny Phantom.
You're too nice. I would be over here being, no, you had to say Loki. You had.
Yeah, it was a good question on Logan's part because he kind of saved his butt and saved two black nerds as well. So thank you guys for doing that. A lot of fun. I look forward to doing more cameo drafts. So I think I'm going to come up with a spreadsheet of all the winners and like track who's won the most. I think that'll be fun. A little leaderboard per se. So, all right, guys, what else? What else have we not touched on? That's it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, did we do like a full character thing of Janet? Did we want to talk about like Janet's journey in this movie?
Yeah, I loved Janet. I thought she was one of the shining stars. I think the big thing we probably didn't touch on is like the kind of the flashback of her in the Quantum Realm meeting Kang. But yeah, I didn't have a lot of it to say, really. I mean, she was awesome.
Yeah.
Better than Hope.
Yeah, they really gave her like, well, because you can only, Michael, didn't you get the memo too, that you can only have one strong female in a movie? Clearly, that's what we do nowadays in 2023.
The shade at Cassie, though.
Yeah. But yeah, I think Janet was fun. The flashbacks were one of my favorite things. Like, I loved the flashbacks. I thought it felt very, almost like Twilight Zone-y to me. The flashbacks felt very like I knew there was another shoe coming to drop. So I was like, when's it going to happen? When's he going to be bad boy Kang? But I think overall I think my only problem with Janet is at times she kept secrets and it was like, but why are you keeping this secret? But why? There's no reason. You're not giving me a reason. You're just telling me I couldn't tell you. It's like, but you could though.
Yeah. I read that she just like wasn't comfortable talking about it, which like, I understand to some extent, but also like, you know, again, like Hank is down there in the quantum realm, like discovering all these things for the first time that she could have just told him about. Like, this is his life's work. Like, and he didn't even tell Hank. Like, I don't know. Yeah. So, you know, convenient, I guess. Any thoughts on Janet, Joshua?
I thought she was very good. I think she did a perfect role for what she had, and introducing Kang almost as like, you know, she thought he was a good guy working towards it. And we see this evil smirk of Kang when she realizes, like, you just see him smile and it was like, oh my gosh, like he revels in this stuff. But Janet really played, I think, a key role in all of this. But again, it's the thing. It's like, why? Why did she keep all of this? Like, yeah, she understands that this is a huge threat, but wouldn't you want to tell, you know, actual Avengers that?
Yeah, she has all the connections to do so. So, all right. Well, I think that takes us to the end here. I did want to touch on, I want to ask you about one thing here, Joshua. Some news that we got this week. It sounds like the MCU is going to be cutting back on a lot of the content that they were throwing out. And I think that's been a big complaint about Phase 4 is just kind of like the Marvel oversaturation. It sounds like we're going to get Secret Invasion and Loki Season 2 only this year, as opposed to like the four shows we were getting before. But what's your take on that? Are you happy about that? Are you sad?
I think it's a very good thing that they're doing that because they realized that a lot of their stuff was a miss, right? So they opened up very hard with Loki and then WandaVision, and then they tried to cram in, I don't even remember the titles of them, Falcon Winter Soldier, whatever, I don't even know. But the other ones, they're just a miss, right? And it's just like, focus on your main titles, focus on the stuff that are really gonna bring people in, right? We get a couple good shows, and then a lot of shows that are just meh. Give us two great shows, two great movies a year, and we'll all be happy.
Well said. Tommy, they're coming for the podcast. We're going to run out of content soon.
What should we have like a pitch session? Yeah, like what do we do? Do we have to create our own Marvel shorts and then podcasts about those shorts? Do we start doing radio dramas, like where we start acting out scenes again that we write like, Oh, Cassie, it's me, Scott, your dad. Please don't mess with the quantum realm.
See, I've always wanted to do a Marvel drunk history, but I don't want to be nobody wants to be drunk on a podcast. So I think we need to like outsource.
You want to be the guide. Yeah, you want to guide people through that journey, but you want someone else to be the main content.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's a possibility. I don't. But Tommy, we're having so much fun covering Last of Us. You know, I think this opens up a world of other things we can talk about. So I don't think we're dead in the water just yet.
I mean, yeah, because Last of Us clearly, everyone saw it. For those wondering why we covered Last of Us, everyone clearly saw the Marvel Iron Man poster that was definitely in the background of one of those buildings that they went through when they were traveling through Kansas City. So that was the connection, guys. Duh. Of course, we're always going to make sure we're covering
it's Marvel canon.
Star Wars stuff. Yeah.
If I had to say one last thing about the movie is, what about the ending when Cassie opens up the portal again, right, for Ant-Man? That was a really big question mark. Is like, wasn't the whole purpose of the portal happening in the first place that MODOK made it? But MODOK's dead. How did Cassie reignite that? We never really get that answer. And it kind of just defeats the purpose of having MODOK. I love MODOK in the movie, like I said, but I think having that moment, it really does him injustice.
Joshua, I really don't appreciate you pointing out plot holes, okay? I'm trying to defend the movie, and I can't defend that, all right?
we're yeah, I'm with Josh. Yeah, that bothered me. And also, like, it, again, I hate when you do a sacrifice play that very quickly gets resolved. Leave it for another movie. Leave Wasp and Scott over there for a bit and have Cassie work on this. And then when she, you know, maybe she is able, now that she has been over there, she knows exactly what signal she's looking for. That would make sense to me, but not that quickly. I'm with you. It was like way too cute. And like the fact that Scott and I were like, we'll be saved. And they were, as it's happening in the background, is like a little too cute.
Yeah. All right. Well said. Do you guys have recommendations? Do we want to do this, Tommy? Are you watching anything new? Or
even new? Yeah, I mean, not really. Last of Us, hey, keep watching that. If you've stopped, don't stop. Keep watching. Vox Machina season 2 wrapped up. If you wanted to get into it, all season 1 and season 2 are out now. You can binge it on Amazon. I showed Michael a clip, and I have him slightly more likely to watch Vox Machina, which is not very likely, but it is still slightly more than it was before he saw the clip.
I was like a -3, and now I'm a 0. So that's good.
The clip was good. It was a good little fight scene. Yeah,
it was. It was cool. Joshua, what's going on in your world? Are you doing anything fun?
I watched The Menu on HBO Max not long ago. Nice little horror movie. I found it great. It was a great little addition. I liked it. Something just really different. And I don't know, if you like horror movies or just like thrillers and stuff like that, maybe this is something for you. You know, especially if you're watching The Last of Us, you know, you need another movie to pick up with your HBO Max to make it worthwhile. That's a good addition. Other than that, I'm not doing anything new. I'm still doing the same things I always do.
I'm finally, this is like old news. Finally watching the Harley Quinn show. It's good. It's a great, like, it's kind of become my background show, honestly. Tommy looks so funny.
How dare you? I recommend this show to you for years. Then you watch it and you watch it as a background. This is the yelling we've got here. You've waited all episode. How dare you?
I guess when I say, like, my background show, like, I'm still paying attention. Like, I know everything's going on. I catch all the jokes. Like, I'm not leaving the, like, when I say background, it's like, I might check some texts here and there.
Yeah. Who's your favorite side character so far?
Bane. Oh, hilarious. Yeah.
Bane is incredible.
He's very good in it. Yeah. I think Clayface is definitely a favorite. I like what the shticks with Clayface.
Yeah. I just watched the episode where, like, he cuts his arm off and his arm becomes like a little baby.
It's a weird one, but it's a good one. Yeah.
Okay. Joshua, thank you so much for doing this. Always a blast to have you on here. I knew you would bring it home for Quantumania. So thanks again. I want to give you the chance to tell people where they can find you online and everything else you're up to.
Yeah, as always, I'm Outcast Originals on Etsy. It's a Survivor shop, looking to expand at some point. I don't know when that is, but at some point we'll try to do Marvel stuff, Star Wars stuff, Indiana Jones, whatever I can really get the rights for at some point. And you can find me on outcast.originals on Instagram. And then if you just look up Outcast Originals, you should be able to find my stuff on Etsy as well. But yeah, other than that, you know, Survivor Joshua Instagram, and I'm in just about every community at this point. So yeah.
Josh has become a pretty big staple in our Discord community, which I'm really trying to boost back up. So if you haven't joined that, you're listening to this, just come hang out. You don't even, I mean, you don't have to talk in there, but it, you know, maybe you had an itch and you wanted to talk about Quantumania. That would be the place to do it. So if you're interested in that, hit us up. We will get you in there.
Absolutely. We got all kinds of stuff. Questions of the day from Michael. We always talking about something, you know, there's always something going on in the world. We like to talk about it.
I'm running out of questions quickly. And tomorrow's day 69 of question of the day. And I'm going to have to come up with something interesting for that. So
your favorite hole.
Yeah. Oh no. All right. On that note, I'm going to close this out. I'd like to remind you guys to rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify, preferably 5 stars. Also, please subscribe because we're going to be here every single week. Actually, I think we're going to be here 3 times this week. We've got Last of Us and The Bad Batch to talk about. So if you subscribe, it's going to come straight to your phone. You're going to get a notification. It's automatically going to download. So convenient, so awesome. It also helps the show. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok at Stark Wars Pod. We also have some merch if you want to check our show notes there. Josh was sporting the great Stark Wars Saber shirt. A lot of cool stuff there. So check that out. But I think that is all we got for you guys. Thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next time.
Bye, the Conqueror.
Which variant is that?
This is By the Conqueror. Yeah, he's the scariest of all the buys.